taking a chance and having faith in an addict like me. This is a real honor to be up here. And when I got the call, Big Dave called me. And he's, well, actually, I saw him, and he kind of mentioned it in passing. And so I was like, well, okay. And kind of put it on the back burner. And it wasn't until last week that we reconnected. And he was like, yeah, you know, you're doing the Friday night. You know, and then he kind of, I was like, okay. And he kind of gave me that kind of voice, like, and don't get up here and choke. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to start off with just for today. And I'm going to come off of November the 12th. And I'm going to give a brief. It says our own story. And it says, when we honestly tell our own story, someone else may identify with us. And that's off the basic text. It's on page 95. And the last paragraph says, each of us has only our own story to tell, and that's it. We can't tell anyone else's story. Every time we get up to speak, many of us find all the clever lines and funny stories seem to disappear from our minds. But we do have something to offer. We carry the message of hope. We can and do recover from our addiction, and that's enough. And just for today, I will remember that my honest story is what I share the best, and today that's enough. And, you know, it helps me get centered, man, you know, because I'm not up here to try to preach to you or teach to you or, you know, the committee didn't ask me to do any of that. They just asked me to get up here and share my experience, strength, and hope, you know. And probably the most important thing I'm going to tell you guys is that I got 24 years clean, you know. And my clean date is October the 1st of 1992, and that's also the day I got out of prison. And I had clean time when I was locked up, but I didn't have faith that I could stay clean, you know. And it was a bunch of addicts that came in doing H&I, they were doing service, which I didn't really understand, but they planted the seed in me that some kind of way I could stay clean. That there were other members that were just like me that, you know, were staying clean out on the streets. And I didn't know how it was going to work. I didn't know a whole bunch about anything, but they gave me some hope, man. Anyway, I'm born and raised right here in San Diego. I'm not, you know, I'm a native San Diegan. This is where I got high, and this is where I got clean. I'm one of 10, and we were raised by my mother, and my mother was a saint. She was a beautiful woman, strong black woman that believed in prayer. You know what I mean? And even before the service, before I really started being a service, my proudest moment in Narcotics Anonymous was that I had 8 months clean when my mother died. It's not like I got some big hell of a spiritual story to tell you about, you know, what I did when she passed away, but I was there, okay? They didn't have to come look for me, and that's how I use, you know what I'm saying? And I'm so proud of that. That's been my moment in recovery. I've done a lot since I've been here. You know, I've had my share of victories around here, and I've also had my share of defeats, but that was my finest hour by far. I've been able to stay clean, take a punch, you know what I mean? And for me, growing up, you know, I'm just a low-budget dope fiend. I don't have a good using story, you know what I'm saying? You know, I always tell this story, but it's true. I robbed the ice cream truck out there, you know what I'm saying? With the kids around it, I was a pitiful addict, you know what I mean? And I just couldn't get it together, man, and I got like a real jail story. You know, a lot of doing time. I started when I was 14. I put that mask on. And what happened for me was I went to the pen and in 1991. I went to the pen ex-con with a gun. And I went and that was the last place I used too, actually. Last place I used was in prison. I don't know what day it was. I don't know anything about that. But I know I was just sick of the whole fucked up game. You know, the disease of addiction had just wore me down to the point where, you know, I was ready to listen. And through a set of circumstances, you know what I mean, I ended up in Donovan State Prison down here in San Diego. And, yeah, I got another member back there. And, you know. And what happened was that I saw this guy. You know, I saw this guy, and I thought he was going out on a visit, you know. And he was all cleaned up, and I said, hey, man, where you going on a visit? And he said, nah. He says, I'm in this program called Say No to Drugs. And we go out and speak to youths and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then he told me, he put the hook on it, right? He said, and when they take us out, they take us to McDonald's and Burger King. And, you know? And I was like, man, how you sign up for that? You know what I'm saying? And it might sound like a silly program, but it saved my life, man. It really saved my life, man. And so I started going to this program. And I was so fortunate at that time, in 91, 92, they started getting help for addicts in prison system. San Diego was the pilot program. And so they would bring in all of these treatment programs, you know, and they would tell us about their services and stuff. And one day they brought in this guy, right? It was a white guy. But he was a convict, man. He was, you know, he was kind of had some tattoos and stuff, you know, and he had a powerful, powerful message, man. And he was talking about something called Narcotics Anonymous. He said that he had a sponsor and he was going to meetings and just a lot of things. He worked something called the Steps, you know what I'm saying? And all of this stuff, and I really didn't get it, but he really gave us some hope, or he gave me some hope. You know, and I was like, well, what is this Narcotics Anonymous thing that he was talking about, man? He was a really, really gifted speaker, man. And so I didn't go up to him after the meeting because we're in jail. And even though it's in a kind of recovery-ish kind of environment, it's still racial, right? So I don't want to tip my hand that this guy touched me. I still got my poker face. I'm just like, but when I went back to my cell, I thought about it, what he had said. You know, some of the things that he had talked about had stuck with me. And that was my any limbs, right? That was my any limbs. Because, you know, prior to this, all I was a reputation. And it was real important what my buddies thought about me, you know? And so I went back to my bunk, and they had a H&I meeting that came in on Monday nights. I'll never forget this. They came in on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. So I went to that, and that was my any limbs. And it was like, you know, it was real important for me that my homeboys, I was real, you know, kind of worried. What would they think about me, you know? And this is how much of a follower I was that, you know what, I was embarrassed to tell people that I wanted to save my life, that I wanted out, man. I was sick of this, you know, this revolving cycle that I had got caught up in, man. And so somebody gave me a basic text, right? And I would tuck the basic text in my waist and walk. And this was back when they had weights. And it'd be like 50, 100 people on the weight pile. And there might be 5 or 10 addicts in that NA meeting. And then I would go in that NA meeting, man. And I remember the first time we circled up to hug at the end of the meeting, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You know what I'm saying? Like, what? You know? But I kept it with something about it, you know? And I started going to the meetings and I would hear. And at that time, it was no people of color. I was only one. So I was like, damn, is this it? You know what I'm saying? But this guy, one of the panel members, he must have read my mind because he got a schedule, right? And circled some meetings on there and said, hey, man, when you get out, if you go to these meetings, you'll see people of color. And a lot of times, you know, we don't like to talk about it. We kind of dance over that kind of stuff like that. And I understand a meeting is a meeting, but a meeting wasn't just a meeting for me. I needed somebody to identify with. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, I was like, whew, you know, kind of like really, really. And that's what I did. I got out, and I got out on a Friday. And I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I was in a program. Every day at 12 o'clock, they would have, so I did my intake at the program, and I saw the people in the meetings in jail. Obviously, it's different because obviously, the biggest reason was there was women at the, you know, outside. And so I'm like, you know what, I'm looking around, right? And, you know, I asked the guy, I said, what's going on there? And he said, it's a meeting. You want to go in there? And I said, yeah. And he says, okay, go on in there, man. We'll finish the intake when you come out, right? And I walked into that meeting, and I found my tribe, man. I found you guys, man. I looked all over for you guys, man. I went down alleys. I went to penitentiaries. I went to some shiesty, shady spots looking for you guys, man. And there you were on Euclid and Imperial. You know what I'm saying? 10 minutes from my mama's house, you know? And I started, you know, just having this love affair with N.A., right? I'm going to meetings, and I would walk to the meetings because I was so uncomfortable. So I'm walking to these meetings and stuff, and, you know, people started knowing my name. And I wasn't like, you know, I mean, I was really excited about recovery, but I was only going to go so far. You know what I'm saying? All the praying and all that kind of stuff, I didn't really need all of that. You know what I'm saying? I just needed to be clean. You know, that was in my, what was in my head. I knew what I needed. I needed to get a job, get off parole, and get me a woman with Section 8. And I was going to be cool. You know what I'm saying? And that was my thought process, right? And so, you know, and it's funny now, but that was a come up when I got clean. You know what I'm saying? And so that was my thought process, but how I really started participating, and I've been a follower all my life, right? I've been a follower. I never acknowledged it, but I heard the language. And it was like, get a sponsor, get you a guy, be a service, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I picked this guy because he was popular, you know. He was real popular. He could share real good at the meeting, and you know what I'm saying? So I knew him from the streets, you know, and I picked this guy. And so if you ask me, you know, hey, you got a sponsor, I drop his name. Bam. You know, and they're like, oh, yeah, man, you in there. You know what I'm saying? But I wasn't going to do no work with him. But the thing that happened for me was that I was living with my daughter's mom. And me and her was like, we didn't have no business being together. One, she was still using and I was clean, okay? But she had the house, and I had never been out on my own. So when I actually paroled to her house, she's still smoking weed, drinking, and I'm kind of scared to tell the people in the meeting. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, we get into it and I jump on her because she wasn't acting right. And that's all I know. I'm like a one-trick pony. I ain't got no other. I just got a caveman move, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? And she calls my parole officer. And my parole officer had been testing me and told me, say, look, you're doing good. But if you do that again, I'm going to send you back. You're going back to prison, clean and all. And for me, that was like a real moment of clarity for me because I did not want to go back to prison. And it's something that I focus in on today. So I called up this guy who I had asked to sponsor me, and he, you know, and I told him, man, this boss, she trying to send me to jail, da da da. I had this big story. And then he just said, hey man, look, you know, he told me, and something I share with the guys I sponsor to this day, is that what we do is not a spectator sport. You know, what you put into this program is what you're gonna get out. If you don't put nothing in, you ain't gonna get nothing out. And that I had to participate in my recovery. And he was nice enough to take me through the steps, man. And we went through the steps, and I just got better as a person. You know what I'm saying? I ain't using. You know, I'm starting to know people. People know me. I'm doing the right thing most of the time. And I get a service commitment. My first commitment was I was a coffee maker. I was a coffee maker at the Saturday morning, was the Saturday nooner meeting at 220 North Euclid. You know, now mind you, I'm 6'4", I'm 250, I've been lifting weights. When I got out, I wasn't making coffee for nobody. You know what I'm saying? You got me messed up if you think I'm the coffee maker. You know what I'm saying? And but I started making coffee, and I was a good coffee maker. You know what I'm saying? And nothing feels better then at the end of the meeting when they say, let's thank the coffee maker. You know what I'm saying? And you get that little clap, man, that's a good feeling, right? So I would just be there just for that some days, you know? And I started growing in recovery. my recovery, you know, really started blossoming. You know, I started doing things and participating, and I had to be one of the most fortunate guys in Narcotics Anonymous, because about two or three years clean, it was a little over 2 years, the fellowship in my area wanted to break off from the area that we were part of. We want to have a voice. And I got to see up close the forming of an area and participate in that. You know, and what a gift that was. I didn't know it at the time, but it was a real gift to go through that process and to be a part of and to see people come together and a lot of the arguments and disagreements, because, you know, a lot of times, right, this is service-oriented, and this is just my opinion, so don't get me wrong. I need to put that disclaimer out there. But a lot of times, you know, service can be kind of confrontational, too, and that's one of the things that turn people off about service, is that sometimes we can be very confrontational and have opinions about whatever. And I got to see that up close and personal, you know, what it takes, you know, the dedication to see these trusted servicemen that they believed, you know, some true believers in our fellowship that wanted to expand and carry the message and take it a step further, man. And I was just like so impressed with the predecessors in my area. And we formed the Southeast Barrio area, Narcotics Anonymous, man. And we formed, man. And it was, you know, really, and that was, you know, my little thing, you know. And so that was, you know, my little set or whatever, you know what I mean, was the Southeast Barrio area, you know, and I'm a proud member, you know what I mean, and I go through and I'm doing service, man, and I get married, and about 2001, my ex-wife now, I'm at work, and she calls me on the phone, and she says, baby, you ain't gonna believe this, and I said, what? And she says, the World Convention just called me, and they asked me to be the spiritual speaker at the convention in Atlanta. And I'm like, get the fuck out. What? You know what I'm saying? And so she says, yeah. And so I'm proud. You know, she proud. We go down there. And I had been to a World Convention before, but I was starstruck. I went to San Jose, and I was kind of starstruck, so I really didn't look at it the same way. And so we go down there, and I'm like doing service, right? By that time, I'm all in with NA, and my thing is merchandise. And I have my motives. I want to get my stuff first, so I volunteer, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, I go and I sign up, and the lines are like 2-3 hours long to get into merchandise. And the very next year, the convention is here in San Diego, NA's 50th. It's right here in San Diego. And so for us to go down there, we kind of know, and we see all of these members. I'm meeting all of these people, and they're like, we coming to San Diego. And so I get back here to San Diego, and the fellowship here, I don't think we really understood what was coming, right? It was like, you know, like, no, you don't understand. And so the World Service Office came down here, and they held a informational meeting, and they said they was going to have a support a committee was going to form. And so I had been doing area service, you know what I mean, but nothing too heavy. And so I went, and I was one of the ones that was selected for the support committee. This is like one of my best service stories, you know. I didn't have a email address, you know. I wasn't computer savvy, you know what I'm saying? And so we go, and they select the people, and we meet, and the people, the members are coming, and they got laptops, and, you know, all the, what's your email address? I ain't got no email address. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, how are you going to communicate? But what I had, and a lot of times I think that what we don't stress enough was I had a willingness to be a service. And I didn't know that. And so we're meeting as a committee, and they come in there and they pick us to do who's going to do what, and they tell me, and I had the privilege of doing service with Molly S. from United East County. And they said, you two are going to do merchandise. And I was like, okay, I got it. We could do that. And then they said, and you're going to need 1,200 volunteers. And I was like, you mean for the whole convention, right? You know what I'm saying? And they're like, no, for merchandise. 1,200 volunteers. And I got scared, man. I was like, I don't know 1,200 people in recovery, you know? And but they walked me through the process. I ended up getting an email address. And at that time, you know, we didn't have a lot of the technology that we have today, you know, and your phone had minutes on it. You could only go, you know. I mean, I know it seems, you know, for some of the newer people, a lot of people remember when you only had, you know, man, I ain't got but 200 minutes on here, and I'm not finna use them all up talking to some guy in Idaho, you know what I'm saying? And, but it really, really helped me see our fellowship in a different light, man. You know, here I am, man, you know, this guy, and I'm starting to call people from all over. I'm getting emails from people, not just in my city or my state, but across the country, all saying they're willing to be a service. They want to come out and help, man, and different from where they put me, where you need me, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And I got just a huge appreciation for our fellowship and what we do as a fellowship, man. You know what I'm saying? And it like opened my eyes in a way that's kind of hard to describe, man, because I'm just a regular guy. I don't consider myself to be anything better or more, but there I was in the mix, man. And I started getting a little more confident about myself as far as my organizational skills and meeting people and setting stuff up. And so I can appreciate the effort that this committee has to put this thing together, right? And it just like blew me away, man. And then when it happened, and to meet everybody, right? It's one thing to talk to a member on the phone, but then it's like, hey, my name is Russ. It's, you know, here I am. You know what I'm saying? And I'm willing. And it just like blew me away, man. And so I really was excited, man. And it was a gentleman. If NA had a Hall of Fame, okay, if we had a Hall of Fame, this guy would be a first ballot unanimous choice. And his name was Mike P., Mike Pollard. And bless his heart, he was just a service. I mean, he really carried our message, man. And he kept us together, man. And he kept us focused. And I blossomed, man. I met people from all over the world, man. I mean, what an experience. And they coming to our city, San Diego, man, we were so proud. We were just so proud, man. And then it didn't stop. And they challenged us, right? They challenged us to not just take the experience and then tuck it into your little, you know, your little, but they challenged us to get out and be a service and help. And when we were at service, right, they broke out. This is where I learned to ask the simple questions. Like, well, where does it say that at? You know, you get, and that's what they would do. You couldn't just say something and just, you know, make it be the gospel. Like, well, excuse me, what page are we on? You understand what I'm saying? And so, and we were out of the Guide to Local Service, and they did something. You don't hear a bunch about it now, but it was a consensus-based decision-making process. And you don't hear a lot about it now, but at every meeting, we would go around the table, and everybody would share what not had anything to do with your service commitment, but just where you were at in your life. Because a lot of times we go through stuff, right? And if I'm going through a divorce, well, obviously I'm not going to be focused on my commitment. If I'm having financial problems or my kids are acting up or any number of situations that anybody in here could be going through, But I just don't have gas money to make it out to the meeting out in wherever it's at. I'm low on funds. I want to participate, but I'm too embarrassed to tell people, man, look, I'm almost out of gas here. And so we would go around the table and they would share honestly about where they were at. And they told us the reason why they would do that so that we could have a better understanding of each other. You know, because there might be something interfering with my recovery that don't have nothing to do with the service commitment. And I learned this process, man, and it was just like a revelation for me. And I just like, okay, you know, and I absorbed all. And so they challenged us to take this out, man. And that's what I did, man. And I went out, man. And after that experience, I really got heavy into service with my area. You know, I've done regional service, you know, and area service. Before I even forget, man, my home group is the Keep It Real group, man. And we meet on Friday nights at 6 o'clock, man, on 61st and Imperial. And I love that group, man. You know, it saved my life, man. If you're ever in town or if you ever need a meeting, put a little flavor in your life, you know, I'll give you my address, you know, give you the address to the meeting, man. We love to have you, you know. And what it did for me is, and I just, this is just my personal belief, that the real heavy lift in our fellowship is done at the group level. That's where the hand-to-hand combat is being done right now. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I love that. I like the fact that the areas are, you know, we carrying the message, and sometimes it can be kind of confrontational and stuff, but, you know, we are carrying the message, man. And so that's where I've been my main focus, man. I've been the area chair, the area treasurer, literature sales, H&I chair, activities chair. That's what I am right now, is activities chair, man. And I just want to help out and do my thing, man. You know what I'm saying? I want to be a part of, man. I want to be a part of the solution. You know what I mean? You know, and so it does my heart good when I participate. And I've been a service since I, you know, like I told you, my coffee commitment. It was early in my recovery when I started being a service, man. And when they asked me to share, it was like, you know, kind of like, because I like the people who are a service and they don't got to tell nobody about it. You know what I'm saying? That's who I love. Those are the real heroes, the men and women who just do it because they can't help it. They just want to carry the message, man. And that's who I try to pattern myself after. And it's a lot of giants up in here, man. And I don't want to start singling people out because I know I'm going to miss some people. But I see you guys, man, and I know that you're a part of. And some of you guys I do service with, you know, and we don't always agree. But at the end of the meeting, we hug each other, you know. And we understand that, hey, man, you know what, we all here for the same purpose, man. And so, you know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. They told me I could go to whatever time. But, you know, a lot of times, man, when it's over, it's over. I'm a true believer of that, too. You know, and it grinds my ass to the bone when somebody just keeps sharing and they ain't got nothing to say. You know? You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I am going to close with a couple of things, you know. And the first one is, you know, to this the host committee, can we give them a hand? Thank you so much. And the last thing I'm going to say is that if you look up the definition of service, the one that I like, the one that I think speaks volumes about Narcotics Anonymous, it says that service is work that's done by one person that benefits another. And I think that that's who we are as a fellowship. You know what I'm saying? Probably the most spiritual thing I've ever heard at any meeting was to keep coming back. And I truly hope from the bottom of my heart that in some small way I've been of service up here too. Thank you.
If that's all you got, man, I'm open for another half hour and listen to you.
All right, let's thank Roy for sharing. All right. says here that I have to ask someone to read just for today. But I want to make an announcement before that. No, right after that. I'm wanting to read.
I'm an addict named Jeffrey from Sonoma County Fellowship in Narcotics Anonymous. And this is the 23rd time I've been to this event since 1994. And I got to go off script for a moment. Yesterday morning at 4 a.m., I was getting ready to leave for the airport, and there was a chrome clean time coin that my sponsee had made for me a few years ago, and it had been sitting on my night table since I got done with it. And something told me, put this in your pocket, someone's going to need it. And it's a 24-year coin. And I forgot to take it out of my pocket going through security at the airport, and it did not set off the metal detector. So I know it's supposed to be here. Okay, just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Divine intervention.
I hear that. Wow. So it says here I need to make an announcement that the game show will start at 10 p.m. in this room. Alright. And let's close the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the third step prayer. What's that? We can circle up, absolutely.
We can circle up.
It's a new thing.
Circle.
Come on, y'all. Hey,
Roy.
Come on, y'all.
After a moment of silence for all the addicts who still suffer, with those cared to, please join us in the third step prayer. Many addicts have said,
take my will to my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live, lead them back to
life. You going to burn some copies of that, or what happened?
You know what? I turned this